Blog Talk Radio.
This is Peter Paul Berzola. It's 5 o'clock out here on the West Coast. We're trying a new time. Excuse me, I still have a slight cold. And we're trying this half-hour segment. Today, many of you people probably watched or heard or read something about the President's, Obama's, very long, windy address to joint session of Congress. And there's, people were a little upset somewhere to hear a congressman, not a spectator in the audience, who would have been ejected, even though the people own Congress, they're paying for it, or the lobbyists own it, but the people, the taxpayers pay for it. this congressman yelled out, liar. And of course, rarely been an uproar in Congress. There have been confrontations between congressmen dating back from 1798 when House of Representative member Lyon was accused of gross indecency for spitting tobacco juice at Roger Griswold, I think from Connecticut, and he came after him. Griswold attacked Lyon with a cane on the House floor. There have been other cases. The most infamous was probably during the pre-Civil War period when slavery was the top issue, was the health care issue of its day in more ways than one. And that was when the House of Representative member Preston Brooks, I think from South Carolina, accompanied by Lawrence Kite, severely beat a U.S. Senator, Charles Sumner, who was anti-slavery advocate. And he paralyzed, made the guy an invalid for life. There have been other confrontations in Congress. There's been duels, at least one duel. Employees have been shot. And, of course, the most infamous was in the administration of Harry Truman, when not only was the terrorists, the Puerto Rican nationalists, I forgot the name of the group, attempted to assassinate President Truman, and when he was living at the Blair House, because they were refurbishing the White House, and they also broke in the Congress and shot up the House of Representatives. And these guys were recently pardoned after 50 years. They were recently pardoned, I think, by President Bill Clinton. So there have been confrontations during World War I and II, when Congress voted on the war resolution, declaration of war against Germany. A woman representative, Jeanette Rankin of Montana, was the only person to vote in both sessions of Congress, to vote against the declaration of war. So, you know, that's a rather mild thing. And for a guy to yell out liar during the president's address to Congress is comparatively mild. At least he didn't come after him with a cane. Or Puerto Rican nationalists with, attempt to assassinate him. You look at the, just digressing here for a moment, sessions of other legislatures around the world, in Japan, when they don't like something and they get locked out, this has happened, the opposition members go outside the door. If they're locked out of what they call the diet, D-I-E-T, there have been cases where they do engage in public urination on the door. There have been fist fights in the British House of Parliament, which is supposed to be the mother of parliaments, some people say. There are interruptions and catcalls and comments from what they call the opposite bench when a member is speaking, or a minister in the Prime Minister's cabinet. And the Speaker of the British House of Commons is supposed to keep order. But these things happen. So, this was relatively mild considering the history of confrontation in the U.S. Congress. One of the big problems. Oh boy, we got a little problem here with Blog Talk Radio. I hope we're on. One of the problems is that we keep hearing the story that illegal aliens and immigrants, illegal immigrants, do not get or are not qualified to get federally funded health care. Well, that's excuse me, that's not accurate. If you go to your public library, your law library, or you even go on the web and look up Book 45, Code of Federal Regulations, it's in there. It's mandated that illegal aliens can get health care at these community health care centers and at emergency rooms. But a lot of illegals do not go to the emergency room because they are supposed to be reported to immigration, except if you're in San Francisco. Excuse me. Now, the other thing that's interesting is that when illegal aliens apply for food stamps, they are also supposed to be reported to Immigration and Naturalization, or I guess it's Homeland Security now. So there are a lot of laws apply to illegal aliens, illegal immigrants. And remember, there is a distinction. Not every illegal in this country is an immigrant. There are a lot of these people, and you see them on the streets, especially guys who are hanging out around major thoroughfares in front of paint stores, hardware stores, or places like Home Depot, looking for contracting work. You know, they get paid cash, and guys come along and pick up these pickup workers, and of course they know the best time to get there is early because you get the best workers. There have been occasions, and I think CNN, when it was doing real journalism, did report that some of these people who pick up these illegals to do work for them, they don't pay them. They throw them out, and they're illegal. What's he going to do? Go to the cops? No, that isn't going to happen, or hasn't happened. But some enterprising journalist, a real journalist, did do a story on that, and it goes on around the country that these illegals who work for cash and try to send some of that money home get taken advantage of. It's a very risky business. Unfortunately, there hasn't been any violence or anybody's died or been seriously injured. It would be an interesting workman's comp case, and how would a person who, an American who hires illegally an illegal alien, and the person gets hurt on his property or on his job site, and if that person goes to one of these immigration lawyers, and that immigration lawyer has somebody do a good investigation, thorough, then sues the guy who, the American who hired the illegal, can the American then fall back on his workman's comp insurance? I doubt it. Or his homeowners. So, you know, some interesting legal morasses there. Something to think about for these people who use illegal alien and illegal immigrant help. And there are people who actually immigrate here illegally intending to become American citizens. But, you know, they don't follow the rules, and that's a problem for them. It's unfortunate, you know, that this human traffic, but it does happen. Now, for people, now we're hearing a lot of complaints about insurance companies who don't deny claims. There, in every state in this union, there are insurance regulations. Some states are stronger than others. For instance, California, New York, I think Illinois is supposed to be very strict about upholding their own regulations. But this is my advice, having worked in that industry for a couple of years. When you have a conflict that you cannot resolve, if you're a policyholder and you cannot resolve a conflict with your insurance company, and you've written, this is what I advise you to do, write to the corporation's president or chairman of the board. You know, send them a certified letter and document your complaint. If they don't respond, file a complaint, a written complaint, preferably by certified letter, to your local your state insurance commissioner. And if they get enough of these letters, they're going to respond to these insurance companies that illegally or questionably deny legitimate claims. And whether this is a medical claim, an auto claim, a homeowner's policy, workman's comp, whatever. Another resource, there are resources out there. This is what I don't understand. This country has a lot of resources for consumers and the individual citizen to fall back on and to rely on to get justice and to get, you know, and fair play. Excuse me. If you have problems with lawyers, now the state bars, not the ones you walk up to and drink, although some of these lawyers never left, are supposed to regulate the legal profession within their state. So if you have a problem with a lawyer over fees, failure to do the case, or other things, ripping you off for money, and it does happen, or other misconduct, you should file a complaint with the state bar. Again, document the complaint. I also suggest to people that if you can't get resolution from some of these state bar organizations, because if a lawyer is politically or connected or is part of a political agenda, like in some of the major states, there are these gay, lesbian, NAMBLA legal organizations, transgendered, and they have infiltrated these oversight bodies with their own membership. You know, you see these gay, lesbian activists within the state bars. You see them as court clerks, staff attorneys, even judges. So you could also complain to the state attorney general. But clearly, the legal profession is out of control. It needs to be reined in tightly and as soon as possible. That's one of the major problems with health care and some of these other issues that involve the use of lawyers. That that a lot of litigation is unnecessary. You know, it's interesting now. It's becoming almost prohibitive for a poor person or for anybody to attend law school. It's costing people about $30,000 or more to attend law school. And when years ago it used to be like $15 an hour, $30 an academic hour, or if you went to a public law school like UCLA or University of California at Berkeley, these type of schools, it was just in-state fees, or if you were out-state or you paid out-of-state fees, and they were minimal. That's all changed because of the cost. But there are too many lawyers out there, and there's an arrogance. I haven't seen such arrogance in nearly 45 years of dealing with this profession and having been, you know, in various occupations, the federal government, nonprofits, media, bounced around myself, and I was a law clerk for a couple of lawyers. So I've seen a lot, and I'm not impressed by the quality and the attitude of a growing number of these lawyers who think that they're untouchable, that their bar card gives them immunity, and that they're infallible, and they can do what they want, when they want, how they want, and to whom they please. So this has got to stop. And I always bring up Shakespeare's, Henry the Sixth. In that play, the two of the characters are talking about lawyers, and they say, one says to the other, "When I become king, I'm going to kill all the lawyers and get rid of all the lawyers." And, you know, that still rings true with a lot of people who have been ripped off by lawyers. And the tragic thing is that the state bars often do not discipline these people or disbar them. A lot of them should be disbarred. But you can go to my website and you can just see documented examples of crooked lawyers, AMICUSVERITAS.org. And there's several web pages there on Californians Against Voter Fraud, American Military Poverty Law, JAWS, Judicial Accountable Watch Service, and there are documented things about lawyers and corrupt judges. Incidentally, we're uploading as much as we can, as fast as we can, to our multimedia video site, YouTube. And so we have Charles de Gaulle in one of his last state visits to the United States. And then the controversy, which I am not directly responsible for, but which French TV picked up on, apparently is very popular. People keep looking at it. That last year, during Labor Day at the Democratic Convention in Denver, Bill Richardson, governor of New Mexico and candidate himself for the Democratic presidential nomination, was talking to the Hispanic caucus, and he was caught on French TV, which we've got a copy of, telling them that Bill Obama was an immigrant. Now, nobody's questioned Richardson about that, and if he was lying, he owes the president, he owes Obama and the country an apology. And if it's true, then, well, that's another story. But, you know, where's our media on this one? And where are all these people who are accusing citizens who are raising issues about, Obama's background being called birthers and, other diversionary tactics. It's interesting, one of my favorite characters in modern history is Otto von Bismarck. We talked about him last week, and his relation. He was the founder. He was a spark plug, and he had ulterior motives, of course, being a Prussian militarist. He was the founder of the modern social welfare system of workmen's compensation, labor laws, anti-abuse of children in labor situations, and health care in Germany. And, of course, other countries looked at Germany and decided they should do, if they didn't want social unrest, because that was Bismarck's motivation, that he had witnessed 1848 when there were uprisings throughout Western Europe, and a lot of the monarchies were afraid that the people were so angry because they failed to improve the living conditions and social welfare conditions for the populations, and there were riots in Paris, in Austria, brought down one of the emperors there, and in Germany. And in fact, Richard Wagner, the great composer, he had to flee because he was involved in what you would call, wouldn't call it terrorist, but an insurrectionist or political dissident. That would be more accurate. And Bismarck decided that when he became Prime Minister of Prussia and he was trying to reunite Germany into a modern state, that he would control the dissident factor within Prussia and Germany by forcing through, it took him about 8 years, I think, the social welfare system that Germany has and has built on since. And Hitler manipulated that to use the healthcare system there to cleanse the population of people who weren't productive, and we hear that argument here today with the proposed healthcare system of these end-of-life panels and that sort of thing, or euthanasia. Margaret Sanger, the godmother of birth control and abortion, she was a nurse who took care of Hitler. A lot of people don't know that, and it's not pushed in our history. Excuse me. And in Germany, during the 10 years of the Third Reich, 12 years, excuse me, 1933, people who were mentally defective or thought to be, who had physical incapacitations, that sort of thing, were put in special sanitariums, special hospitals, and were euthanized. And, of course, if they were the wrong ethnic group, gypsies, some homosexuals. Lesbians we don't know much about because nobody has really done an in-depth research on lesbians in Nazi Germany and even in Russia. If you look at some of these concentration camp films that were taken after the war, even during the war, because the Germans were meticulous at keeping records, you look at some of these women, and there's something about them. They got to be lesbians or closet lesbians. These are the the women who were the guards and administrators of some of these camps. But this is what went on, and we don't want that to happen here. And that's why it's very important that we go very carefully and look at the resources that we already have, and look and see what other countries have done, and graft the best in that country, and look at the things that don't work. And I was talking to a doctor who is down here from Canada, and he's working, I think, as a resident. I talked to him the other day, and we didn't get a chance to discuss much of the system, but he asked me what I thought of the healthcare debate, since I had worked in the field briefly. And I said, there have to be a lot of changes. There are definitely things wrong, but we have to go slow. And he says, well, all these systems, even in Canada, and this guy was from there, he studied up there, got his medical degree. I said, there are problems up there. So we have to accept that no system is perfect. But that doesn't mean that we cannot improve on the resources that we already have, and we should, and people should demand that, and demand that these legislators and these media people start telling the truth and start, if they don't, can't do the research, do it themselves. They're the ones that wrote these laws, these legislators, especially in the, you will find this in Book 45, the Code of Federal Regulations, on health care for illegal aliens. That's the latest book. They come out every year, and the latest book that I looked at was 2008-2009. So I'll try to get more information on that, because these are typically written by people who specialize in writing the codes, and they're voluminous. And, you know, nobody knows how to write succinctly, but they want to dot all the I's and periods and all that sort of thing. So that's where that's at. But it's there. It's in black and white, and it's what the judges call black letter law. So, you know, this whole thing is a red herring that illegals will be covered under the proposed Obama plan. They are already covered. So let's get it right. Let's understand it and then go from there. The other thing is, for you people who are still traveling, who haven't taken your vacation, or you should do this every day anyway, the insurance companies, at least in California now, the insurance commissioner, who is also running for governor, on the Republican side, Posner, I think is his name, Steve Posner, has permitted the insurance companies to now charge and rate their premiums as if they charge people who drive cars and vehicles, auto insurance, on the number of miles that they drive every year. So you've got to protect yourself, and I've seen this time and time again, and other people, I know people who have been victims of reckless drivers. People still have not and will not obey the anti-texting laws using cell phones. We try to, every time I see a classic case, my camera's not working. But we'll be putting some of this stuff up on our DamnReckless Driver.com website. It's just outrageous what these people are doing, the tailgating. I actually saw a woman weaving in her car while texting, and she's looking down texting, and I'm alongside her. And I got part of it on camera, and she's weaving out into the two lanes. Fortunately, there wasn't a lot of traffic. But, they will not obey the law. And one policeman, I think it was Richard Berdisco, who was on this show, famous San Francisco policeman. We were talking about this issue, and he's in agreement with me and other people that there ought to be very heavy fines, such as $1,000 for people caught texting and using the cell phone. And if they can't pay it, they lose their license until they do pay it. So maybe that'll discourage this, and because it's a gross safety violation, and I wonder how many accidents have been caused by people on the cell phone or texting, whatever. And even these Blackberries, the things that are plugged into people's ears, if the radiation don't get you, maybe a bad driver will. So these are things that people should talk about and should be aware of. I hope this is getting through. We've had a problem with something on the web. So, excuse me, that I hope that people will start to pay attention. And, they used to say Americans are big lawbreakers, that we have the most laws and we have the most lawbreakers. But, it's time to regulate your behavior, and because when you're out on the road, you're responsible for other people, especially if you get behind the wheel of a car or a truck. Now, the other issue, this is growing, about this texting and cell phones, are pedestrians who are walking across the street and yak, yak, yak on their cell phone, not paying attention to traffic, and people on bicycles. And, of course, bicyclists now think they have special rights. They're supposed to be licensed in California, but the law is not enforced. And they go through red lights. I've seen them on cell phones. And we've had lawsuits, civil lawsuits of pedestrians who have been injured while in the crosswalk but yakking on their phone or weaving in and out of the crosswalk, not paying attention to where they're walking, but, running their mouths on the phone. And they have sued drivers and bus drivers who have hit them, and they have lost. So, just because you're a pedestrian doesn't mean you can do what you please, when you please, when you please, and how you please, that, the law applies to you, too. And even basic good sense that, you know, you should pay attention when you're on the street, because cars, you know, there are people who lose control of their vehicles and they go up on the sidewalk, you know, people get heart attacks or whatever, and it's happened. And so you need to be aware of your own presence and be aware that you need to be act in a responsible, safe manner just to protect yourself. So enough of that. The other thing is we're going to try this schedule. I hope we're still going across the air. There's something happened on the web. But we'll try this format because people on the East Coast used an earlier hour. We've tried early morning. We've tried early afternoon. And, of course, it's at this time of day, I'm usually sometimes doing a 14-hour day. But just to accommodate people, I hope that this will work out, that this time frame. We'll try a half an hour next week and see how that works. It's the same time, 5 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. And then if it works out well, we will extend it, and there will be more interview, a little excerpts from fascinating people I've interviewed when I was in public radio. And I did find Mel Belli talking about the death of his iguana. It's just a classic, good old Mel. I did some projects with him. And then the great lawyer, Melvin Belli, or Bellicose, his enemies called him. And then I have the last British general. I found that, so we're working on that one. And then the last British American survivor of Gallipoli. This is not known. I was told about this Colonel Hodges when I was in Australia. An Australian diplomat told me, you've got a guy living in California who served Gallipoli and also was in the American Army in World War II. So I looked him up when I came back and did about an hour and a half interview with photos, and we'll put that up. And fascinating, I think he worked as a vice president for Chrysler prior to World War II. And fascinating, one of the things he said, I was surprised, that after World War I, England went through a depression, and a lot of English who were officers in World War I had emigrated to the United States, legally emigrated. And when World War II was looming, or was September 1st, 1939, it started, around 1940, what was the Defense Department at that time was called the War Department. They put out the word that to these British officers who were living in the United States to join the services to train the incoming American soldiers who would be perform the army that would fight in Europe and in the Pacific. And so those people who argue that Roosevelt knew before Pearl Harbor that there was going to be a war, he made this statement about World War II. Now, the other thing is Admiral Yamamoto, who's probably one of the two greatest admirals that Japan produced, was the guy who did the planning, and Admiral Nagumo executed the plan on Pearl Harbor. Now, the plan was that the diplomats who were negotiating in Washington were supposed to give a warning to Secretary of State Cardell Hall a couple of hours before the Japanese sent their planes in. Now, there was a translation problem at the Japanese embassy, and they didn't do it in time before the deadline. And so what had happened was the planes attacked at the scheduled time, whereas the Japanese diplomats were negotiating with Cardell Hall, and so it was considered a sneak attack. Well, then Yamamoto said, when he realized what had happened, and after it had happened, said, I think we have awakened a sleeping giant. And I'll tell you more about Yamamoto in an upcoming episode, and Admiral Togo, another great Japanese admiral. But Yamamoto and Togo had been here in the United States. In fact, Yamamoto had studied at Harvard. So I want to thank you for listening at this hour. We're honing this thing. There'll be more videos. And go to my website, amicusveritas.org, or YouTube, Amicus Veritas. Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in next week at this time. It'll be Tuesday and Thursday, and hopefully that will work out. This is Peter Paul Brizola for The Shadow. A new shadow. Thanks for viewing. Thanks for listening.